Please repeat after me. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Shukadev Goswami said, Balabhadraha, Lord Balaram, Kuru Shrestha, O best of the Kurus, King Parikshit, Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, Ratam, on his chariot, Ashtitaha, mounted, Surit, his well-wishing friends, Didrikshuhu, wishing to see, Utkantaha, eager, Prayayau, traveled, Nanda Gokulam, to the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. Translation by devotees.
Usually when it's the beginning of the chapter, it's like a custom that the speaker reads like a summary in front, if you wish to read it before, so that's usually the reason.
The introduction.
Yeah, the summary. Yeah.
The summary. So I can do that now?
As you wish.
Okay. I'll do that before I read the purport. Shukadev Goswami said, O best of the Kurus, once Lord Balaram, eager to visit his well-wishing friends, mounted his chariot and traveled to Nanda Gokula. Please repeat after me. Shukadev Goswami said, O best of the Kurus, once Lord Balaram, eager to visit his well-wishing friends, mounted his chariot and traveled to Nanda Gokula. So as the tradition in the temple is, we should read the introduction to the chapter, the summary of the chapter, before we go forward. This chapter relates how Lord Balaram went to Gokula, enjoyed the company of the cowherd girls, and dragged the Jamuna River. One day, Lord Balaram went to Gokula to see his relatives and friends. When he arrived there, the elder gopis and Lord Krishna's parents, Nanda and Yashoda, who had all been in great anxiety for a long time, embraced him and blessed him. Lord Balaram prepared appropriate respects and greetings to each of his worshipable elders according to age, friendship, and family tradition, relation. After Gokula's residence and Lord Balaram had inquired about each other's welfare, the Lord rested from his journey. In a short while, the young gopis came to Lord Balaram and questioned him about Lord Krishna's well-being. They asked, "Does Krishna still remember his parents and friends? And will he be coming to Gokula to visit them? For Krishna's sake, we gave up everything, even our fathers, mothers, and other relatives. But now he has abandoned us. How could we help but put our faith in Krishna's words after seeing his sweetly smiling face and thus being overwhelmed by the urges of Cupid? Still, if Krishna can spend his days in separation from us, why can't we tolerate separation from him? So there is no reason to keep talking about him." In this manner, the gopis remembered Sri Krishna's charming talks, enchanting glances, playful gestures, and loving embraces. And as a result, they began to cry. Lord Balaram consoled them by conveying the attractive messages Krishna had given for them. Lord Balaram stayed in Gokula for 2 months, sporting with the gopis in the groves of the Jamuna shore. The demigods who witnessed these pastimes played kettle drums in the heavens and showered down flower petals, while the celestial sages recited Balaram's glories. One day, Lord Balaram became intoxicated by drinking some Varuni juice and began wandering about the forest in the companies of the gopis. He called out to the Jamuna, "Come near so I and the gopis can enjoy sporting in your waves." But the Jamuna ignored his command. Lord Balaram then started to pull the Jamuna by the end of his plow, splitting her into hundreds of tributaries. Trembling out of fright, the goddess Jamuna appeared, fell down at Lord Balaram's feet, and prayed for forgiveness. The Lord let her go and then entered her waters with his girlfriends to sport for some time. When they rose from the water, the goddess Kunti presented Lord Balaram with beautiful ornaments, clothing, and garlands. Even today, the Jamuna flows through the many channels cut by Lord Balaram's plow, the signs of his having subdued her. While Lord Balaram played, his mind became enchanted by the gopis' pastimes. Thus, the many nights he spent in their company seemed to him like a single night. So I'll read the verse again. Shukadev Goswami said, "O best of the Kurus, once Lord Balaram, eager to visit his well-wishing friends, mounted his chariot and traveled to Nanda Gokul." Purport. As Srila Goswami points out, Lord Balaram's journey to Sri Vrindavan is described in the Hari Vamsha, Vishnu Parva, 46:10. Remembering the deep friendship he once enjoyed with the cowherd folk, Lord Rama went alone to Vraja, having taken Lord Krishna's permission. The simple residents of Vrindavan were aggrieved that Lord Krishna had gone to live elsewhere. So Lord Balaram went there to console them. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur addresses the question of why Lord Krishna, the great ocean of pure love, did not also go to Vraja. In explanation, the Acharya provides the following two verses. The Yadus thought, "The Lord's beloved girlfriends are famous for their pure ecstatic love, and his parents are extremely affectionate toward him. Lord Krishna is controlled by pure love, so if he goes to see them, how will he be able to leave them and come back to us?" With this in mind, the Yadus prevented Lord Hari from going, knowing that he became subservient to the pastimes in which he reciprocates the ever-increasing love of the inhabitants of Vraja. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born into the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So in this verse, in this chapter, we see how Lord Balaram and also Krishna, that they are so much affectionate to their devotees that they want to go and visit their devotees. See, we go on pilgrimage to Mayapur, to Vrindavan, to see Krishna. But here, Krishna is going on pilgrimage to see his devotees. That Krishna loves his devotees so much that he's always thinking of them. But it also depends upon the level of what the devotee is. As Krishna explains in the Gita, that as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So depending upon how pure is a devotion of that person, then Krishna is thinking about them. Sometimes we may think that, you know, we're praying to Krishna, we're praying to the Lord, but is He hearing our prayer? Is He thinking about us? We're thinking about Him, but is He thinking about us? So the answer is that He is thinking about us. And the more that we think about Him, the more He's thinking about us. As soon as we think about Krishna, Krishna knows it, and He begins to think about us. So it just depends upon the level of intensity of our meditation on Krishna. So the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan, their meditation was so intense that here we have Balaram going on pilgrimage to see his devotees. Just the opposite of what everybody else is doing. They go to see the Lord. In this case, how great the devotee is that Krishna is going on pilgrimage to see them. Because Krishna is very humble. He's extremely humble. He's not at all proud. In the end of the second part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Nanda Kumar, when Gopa Kumar comes back, you know, after going through so many different planetary systems, and when he arrives and Lord Krishna sees him, he runs to embrace him and he begins to cry. They both begin to cry. And Lord Krishna was saying, I have been looking down that path every day, wondering when you're going to come. When will you be merciful unto me? Krishna saying, when will you show your mercy on me? At Krishna's. We're praying that Krishna show His mercy on us. But Krishna is thinking that we should be merciful to Him. That's how He feels about every living entity. That you should be merciful on Him. That is how humble Krishna is. Has all superlative qualities, including humility. So He's thinking this way. That's why Srila Prabhupada says that every step that we may take toward Krishna, He takes 10 steps toward us, because He wants us to come to Him more than we want to go. That is why He's thinking it's our mercy that we come to Him. And it's explained by Chitraketu Maharaj in the 6th canto, the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Lord Krishna considers it a victory when He's able to capture a conditioned soul and bring him back to Him. He doesn't consider it a victory that he's able to, you know, kill Hiranyakashipu, or that he's able to, you know, kill some, you know, demon or Kamsa. It's not a victory for him. A victory for him is if he can reclaim one of us. That's what he considers a victory, supreme victory. So it depends upon our devotion, our intensity of thinking about Krishna. Then the same intensity will be there in Krishna's part. So that's why Bhakti Siddhanta, he said, don't try to see Krishna. You should act in such a way that Krishna wants to see you. Like that, Naksi, Krishna wants to see us. Darshan means not that we go to see Krishna, but that Krishna sees who is coming to see me. So you don't have to be at the front. Krishna has very big eyes. He can see you standing at the back. That's what it means, darshan. That Krishna comes. He wants to see who has come to see me. Because he sees everybody. So, Krishna is always thinking of his devotees. Just like there's a one instance mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion about that one South Indian Brahmin who was very poor, but he heard that simply if you do puja in your mind, manasa puja, that this is good enough. You know, this is also acceptable to Krishna. So he did very elaborate, in his mind he was doing very elaborate puja, you know, with golden articles and silver articles and cooking with pure ghee, only the best ingredients that his mind could acquire. Everything was done, you know, paka. And this went on for years. He was worshipping the Lord this way in his mind. And then one day he had made some payasam, some sweet rice. And he was put it in the bowl and he put a tulsi leaf in and he offered it. But he was thinking, maybe it's a little too hot. It might burn the Lord. So he stuck his finger in, just to make that touch it, you know, with the back of his finger. You know, use that by the back of your finger because it's more sensitive. And he touched it and it was so hot it burned him. And he broke out of his meditation. His finger was all red. And in Vaikuntha, Lakshmi Devi is seeing that the Vaikunthapati is smiling. And she's saying, oh, what are you smiling about? What are you thinking in your mind that you're smiling? He says, I'll show you. And he sends the Vaikuntha Bhimana and brings back the Brahma. This is what I was thinking about. This is why I was smiling. Because as the devotee was meditating on Krishna, Krishna was meditating upon him. So we should never think that Krishna... This is just as he was aware that when we became envious and we were pushed out of the spiritual world, he's also aware of when we're changing our mood and coming towards it. He's thinking that way. Because Krishna is everywhere. He's in our heart. There's no way that he cannot know what we're thinking. And it's also explained that one time Ramanujacharya, he had some questions. He had six questions. There were doubts in his mind. So he was in Kanchipuram, and he asked the servant of the Lord, Kanchipuna, to please ask the Lord, I have six questions, I have six doubts, and you please get the answers from him. Without telling what the questions were. Because although he knows that the Lord knows what the questions are. So then one of the questions was, what happens if at the time of death the devotee doesn't think of the Lord? It could happen, you know. You're all driving happily on Sankirtan and then the driver falls asleep and you hit a... So many devotees have died in traffic accidents. Like my God, with the Tamal Krishna, boom, hit a tree, instantly dead. So the question was, what happens if at the time of death your devotee is unable to think of you? And Varadaraj replied, then I will think of him. That Krishna will think of you. You die. And so we should always remember that. Krishna is thinking about us. Sometimes we read in the Shastras how different devotees, they compete for the Lord's attention. Just like we have in Vrindavan, there's the two camps, Radharani's camp, and Chandravali's camp. They're both competing who will get Krishna's attention. But what's more rare is when different deities are competing for a devotee's attention. That actually happened. And there's a little backstory. It's in the case of Ramanujacharya. Two different deities were competing for him. So the backstory was that he had accepted Yamunacharya for his guru, to be his guru, and Yamunacharya had accepted him to be his disciple. But before they could meet and have the initiation ceremony, Yamunacharya died. And so he was very despondent. Ramanujacharya was very despondent and he went back. And so then that's one of the other prayers, one of the other questions he had is who should he accept as his guru? So one of the questions was about what happens if somebody had died. The other one of the questions was who should he accept as his guru? And that was Mahapurna. So that will be an important part of the story. So anyway, Yamunacharya wanted Ramanuja to be the new Acharya of the Sri Sampradaya. And he wanted all his chief disciples to instruct him. You know, the arrangement was that each one was specialized in a certain topic, And then they would instruct Ramanuja, and he would know more than everybody else. Like that. So Yamunacharya put his son, Tiruvaranga, in charge in the meantime. So then when this... So he got the prayer. They sent Mahapurna to teach Ramanuja. In the meantime, he got the prayer. He got the answer to his question that Mahapurna should be his guru. So he left Kanchi and he went to Sri Rangam, and they met in the middle. Right? So then they were very happy. And so then Mahapurna said, well, let's go back to Kanchi and I'll initiate you. And Ramanuja said, no. Last time I went to get initiated to another city, the guru died before I got there. So we're going to have an initiation right here. Not even one step we're going to go. Initiate me right now. Because life is uncertain. So Mahapurna was very happy about this. And that he was so insistent on getting initiated. So we initiated him. And he was, then he was, every day they got a lodging and every day he was instructing him. But Ramanujacharya's wife was a real problem because she was extremely bodily conscious and very caste conscious. So one day, because Mahapurna's wife was with him, he was a grihastha, so they were, his wife and Ramanujacharya's wife, they were drawing water from a well. And as the two buckets were going up, some of the water from Mahapurna's wife's bucket fell into Rakshakambo's water. That's the wife of Ramanujacharya. So she became very indignant. What you who do you think you are now? That you're polluting my water. Even though that Mahapurna was a Brahmin, she considered herself of a higher caste because her father's lineage was from a more respectable Gotra, etc., etc. She was very extremely puffed up this way. And so this created an argument. And Mahapurna saw it, and so he said, let's go. He immediately left with his wife. And first he chastised her, then they left. So when Ramanujacharya came back, when he found out what happened, he was furious. He was extremely furious. Because it's not the first time she had done something like this. She had spoiled his chances of getting the Mahaprasadam, the remnants of Mahaprasadam of a pure devotee who happened not to be a Brahmin. So, and she did several other things. So he was very upset with her that now that she had made his guru leave. And then this was the second strike against her. Then she did a third, she did offended some other devotees. So then he sent her away and he took sannyas. By trickery he sent her home. And as soon as she left, he took sannyas from Adiri, Vardaraj. So as soon as the devotees in Shurangam heard that Ramanuja had taken sannyas, then they thought, well, now he can come to Sri Rangam and we can do our duty and teach him all the different subjects. So then they went and they asked, they prayed to Ranganath Swami, to you please ask Varadaraj to send Ramanuja here. Varadaraj is the presiding deity of Kanchi. So you ask him to send him over here. And so Ranganath Swami said to Varadaraj, you please send him over here. He says, what? It's better you just ask me to send my own soul to you. I'm not going to send him. He's staying here. No way I'm sending Ramanuja to you. He's staying with me. So then now the devotees were stuck. He's refusing the request of the Lord. There's a little competition here between Ranganath Swami and Varadaraj. So they were thinking, what are we going to do? How are we going to get Ramanuja here? So they were thinking, they said, Varadaraj is a weak spot. He has a soft spot for singing. Gets all sentimental about singing. So they sent Tiruvaranga, happened to be an expert singer. So he went to Kanchi and began singing his heart out in front of the Lord. And the Lord, he was beside himself in ecstasy, and he said, you're breaking my heart. Just whatever you want, I'll give it to you. I'll give you, villages, I'll give you young women, girls, whatever you want. And Tiruvaranga said, no. They just kept on singing more, singing, his heart out. And then you know, Bharadwaj, you're killing me with, you know, seem like that song, you know, killing me softly. There was one song like that. Says, you're killing me with your singing. You know, it's like it's ecstatic. It says, I'll give you anything you want except my wife. Whatever you want. So Tirubharanga thought that being an opportune moment, he says, I want him. I want this. I want Ramanuja. And then Bharadwaj says, I knew there was something. I knew you were up to something. You can't have them. Anything else you can have. And Tirubharanga said, what are you talking about? When you came to Lord Ramachandra, you kept all your promises. Now you're breaking a promise? How this can be? So Varadaraj was not very happy about this. You got me. You know, take him. You got me by logic, you know. So he said, you can take him. So then Tirubharanga did not wanting to that the Lord changes his mind. Immediately they left and they went to Srirangam, where he was installed as the acharya, and he was also taught all the different parts of the vidya of the Sri Sampradaya. But this shows that the Lord, when the devotee is so dear to him, that even there's competition between different deities for the attention of that devotee. But before Ramanujacharya left Kanchi, he took the Utsava Murti with him, and he worshipped the Utsava Murti of Varadaraj for the rest of his life. He always took that deity with him, Varada Krishna, Devaraj. So it's getting toward any questions? So the main thing that we should remember is that, as Bhaktisiddhanta said, we should act in such a way that Krishna wants to see us, that he also becomes eager to see us.
Thank you very much for both of you. Just one question about your point that Krishna is eager to help us go back to the spiritual world. Someone may say, in Kali Yuga, we're very much in the Bodhi concept of life. We rely on evidence from the senses. So someone may doubt that, may say, well, what evidence is there? What sort of, gross evidence is there that Krishna...
Look over there and you'll see the evidence. In the middle of London, he sent his pre-representative, Srila Prabhupada, who has brought us Krishna. Krishna goes to so many lengths. He created the whole material world to correct us from our insanity. You know, there's the Ganga, the Tulsi Devi. Just by seeing Tulsi Devi, we get spiritual advancement. It's circumambulating. He goes to great lengths to help us to become purified. And then, you know, Lord Chaitanya, in his manifestation, he comes to spread the holy name. You know, that is the method of Yuga Dharma. And then through that Purampara, Srila Prabhupada has come to the West. And here in the middle of London, not only in the middle of London, the most degraded part of London, Soho, that's what I'm told, here we have a temple. How is that possible? So all you have to do is look to your right and you can see the evidence for yourself. Know how to do any logical gymnastics. You can just see with your own eyes. There is the evidence. And you were also engaged in the kirtan, you know, taking the prasadam. You know, so that's all of these things. Srimad Bhagavatam, at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, they explained that now that Krishna's left, what will be the guiding light for us in the Kali Yuga? And that's that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. So there's so many ways that Krishna is taking care. But we are like the feverish patient with the high fever who is delusional and is kicking the doctor. You know, but the doctor is so kind and tolerant that he tolerates the kicking of the crazy patient while they're administering the medicine. Krishna. Krishna is a wonderful person. But we have doubts about him.
Well, could you also say something about, now the Sankirtan movement has been going for such a long time, we see that the world situation is actually getting worse. There's more and more wars all the time, more and more wars taking place in the world. How is that?
As I think there's a saying in the Bible, I'm not sure what it is, that there will be wars and rumors of wars till the end of time. Because that's the way the material world is designed, to be this way. It's not an accident. It's designed to be this way, to create misery. And people can get their karma fulfilled. So much animal slaughter is there. So the result of animal slaughter is war. And it's not, you know, this is how. Why should we be surprised? The Bhagavad Gita was in the middle of a war. The Ramayana is all about a war. This has been going on, yes, forever. So many wars between the devas and the asuras, proxy wars. We're at war with Maya. It's a world of war. Even in the most, I was living in one of the most beautiful parts of North America, North Carolina, in the mountains, and look, it's idyllic, beautiful mountains. Everything looks very peaceful. But if you separate two blades of grass, there's one bug eating another bug. There's a world of death. So that's why be surprised? It's always been this way. I had one book. I have a book called the Encyclopedia of War. It's about this thick, you know. Oh. You know, and one of the interesting things about it is that sometimes atheists say that, you know, all wars are started by religion. Well, I can conclusively say that less than 10% of wars are started by religion. Because I looked through the book and only about less than 10% have anything to do with religion. Wars have been fought for every possible excuse. You know, like there was one. Trivial excuse of like the outcome of a football match between Uruguay and Paraguay. You know, scores of people were, you know, they went to war with each other because they didn't like the score of the football match. Yeah. So, yeah. Or atheist countries. You know, Vietnam and China went to war in 1970, and both countries were atheists. So, what does that have to do with religion? So, very few wars are fought over religion. So that's a. Speaking about wars. Yeah.
Well, if I can ask something, the gopis, they are feeling separation from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't satisfied by seeing Lord Balaram.
Who said that? They were very happy to be with Balaram. He only stayed there for 2 months.
I thought they were complaining to Balaram. Krishna,
well, they're also, but that's why he stayed with them. But he had his own gopis. He was with his own gopis, and he was not with Krishna's gopis. There's a very nice section of the first part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the last chapter, where it describes how Krishna he didn't get up one morning. He didn't show up in the court of Ugrasena. So they're wondering where he was. Usually he was very punctual, very early, rises early before the cock crows. They're wondering where he was. So Narada Muni goes to the court, and he finds everybody is standing around. They're all wondering what's wrong with Krishna. They're in hushed whispers. He's in bed with his clothes over his face. You know, he's not getting. He's crying. His pillows are soaking wet. You know, they're drenched. And so they start to talk that Krishna, you know, he's missing the Brajabasis. He's totally missing the Brajabasis. And but they're afraid to send him there because then he won't come back. And they'll be in the same mood, they'll be in the same condition the Brajabasis are in. They don't like what they're going through, and they feel sorry for them, but they don't want to be in that condition either. there was like two parties. Those who had been in Vrindavan, Balaram, Uddhava, and Rohini, they were saying he should go. But the others didn't want him to go. because then they would be crying, like Mother Yashoda and the gopis are crying, and they didn't want that to happen. So then Rukmini spoke up. He says, yes, it's true. Krishna, you know, in his sleep, he's, you know, sometimes he's crying for this cow, that cow, or he's crying for his different girlfriends or Mother Yashoda. And then Satyabhama, he says, what do you mean in his sleep? What are you talking about? In the daytime, I can see his mind is, he's thinking about somebody else. We were his wives in name only. Only in name were his wives. He belonged to these other women. Like that, you know. So they were trying to figure out what to do about Krishna, because he's having a nervous breakdown. Totally having a nervous breakdown, because he's thinking about the Brijabasis. So finally they come up with a plan. That this is not the first time this has happened. So Lord Brahma had Vishvakarma built a new Vrindavan in Dwarka, away from the city, but you know, it was a complete replica of Vrindavan, except that he couldn't make people, because they were just, he could make everything else. He made replicas of all the gopis and everybody, but they were such unique personalities, he couldn't make duplicate people. So they were totally replicas. And so they took the unconscious Krishna and Balaram, and the Garuda brought them to that place. And Balaram quickly recovered consciousness, but and they stuck in, you know, flute in his belt. They dressed him up like a cowherd boy. And everybody was hiding, except for Rohini. Rohini was put in the village because she would be in place there, because she was in the village. You know. Anyway, Mother, you know, the Rukmini would be out of place, so immediately Krishna would understand something was up. So they Rukmini woke up, you know, and Balaram had to, you know, really shake him to get him awake. Then he wakes and he's wondering, where am I? You know, and he's, oh, yeah. Then Balaram is saying, you have to go, the cows are going to the forest, we have to go, to, you know, do our job. And then all the other, see, his grandmother was hiding, they were all hiding. And they, when Devaki never saw this feature of Krishna, where he's dressed up as a cowherd boy, and she became so overwhelmed that breast milk started, you know, Krishna is 125 years old, so imagine how old Devaki is, that breast milk started flowing from her breast just by seeing Krishna. And then Satyabhama and his own grandmother became lusty for him. They started chasing, they were trying to chase Krishna, they wanted to embrace him, and they had to be tackled, you know, the others tackled them and dragged them back into the bushes, because otherwise Krishna would know what was going on. But these are all, they're all like statues, they're not real people. So Balaram is saying, your fathers, they're so upset with you that they're not speaking. This is where he could cover the fact that they were being silent, you know. And your mother's been so worried for you that she can't say a word, you know. And so then Mother Rohini starts speaking like that, and then this way, you know, Krishna doesn't figure out what's going on, and he goes towards out towards the cows, and then he sees Radharani there, and he starts talking to her, but she's not speaking back. He says, "Oh, so you're angry with me because of, you know, what, you know, like this," and then he comes speaking with her. Then he says, "I'm going to meet you tonight," and all these different things. And then he looks around everywhere. First, he throws some flowers at her, and he looks around everywhere, to make sure nobody's looking, and he embraces her and kisses her, and he runs away. He runs off, you know, to go with the cows. But now, when he goes with the cows, and he notices that the Jamuna River is very big. it's the Arabian Sea. and that these huge waves are crashing. It doesn't look like the normal Yamuna. And then he sees Dwarka over there, and then he starts coming back to his conscious, and then he starts laughing, and then Balaram figures out that, okay, he's over his nervous breakdown. And then, you know, so the point being is that Krishna, you know, he's very overwhelmed by separation. He's also feeling great separation, but he's being held back because they also, you know, who's going to hurt more, the Dwarkavasis or the Brijabasis, like that, you know. So while the Devaki and Vasudev they were granted that they would be the parents of Krishna. Whereas Nanda and Yashoda, they were granted pure devotion. They were granted pure devotion. So they are experiencing that pure devotion. The subtle difference is there. We're way, it's way above us. So Krishna, he is thinking of his devotees all the time. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu?
Thank you, Prabhu. When you said about Gopal Kumar and Krishna's son, and then Krishna told him that, thank you for being merciful. I heard a lecture from my angel.
Mm-hmm.
He says that the same way he says that Krishna is suffering because he wants to be with us, not that we are not with him. So my question is, how could we perform our service with this type of understanding and consciousness that it's not for us, it's for actually Krishna's desire,
because
he wants to,
that's
for him,
is
to fulfill his
dream. Well, that's kind of see, in the seventh canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, when explaining the nine processes of devotional service, that actually Krishna doesn't need our service, because he's always blissful, he's always happy. This is also part of his bliss with his devotees. So that it's not like Krishna is needy. So to perform, this is not for his benefit, but for our benefit. But like a parent, when a parent sees people who are parents, when their child is suffering, who suffers more? The child or the parent? It's not the parent who's got the fever, but the parent is worried. Like that. So that, in that sense, Krishna is the seed-giving father of all creation. He feels, it's like a parent, he feels some concern. But at the same time, he's not materially distressed, because he's always blissful. That's also part of his leela. He gets pleasure that way, thinking that way. So it's not that he's deprived of something. In one sense, he is. He feels that he wants our love. But it's not that he's... we need him, he doesn't need us. He's got zillions and zillions of devotees. But at the same time, because it's inconceivable how it can be. Yeah. Because it's a natural position to be in the service of Krishna. So if we understand, getting back to your question, how we can change that mood is, if we just understand what a lovable person Krishna actually is. It's one beginning level, like in Christianity, a God-fearing man, right? This fear of God. And even that's even mentioned in the Bhagavatam, there's that one section, Out of fear of God, the wind blows. Out of fear of God, the rain falls. Out of fear of God, death goes about taking its toll. That's the beginning of bhakti. The fear of the loss of love. So a child becomes fearful as a parent. They think that maybe the loss of love is there. But that's just the very beginning stages, where you could say Aishwarya is involved. But like Mother Yashoda, the only time Mother Yashoda was fearful about Krishna was she thought, well, maybe I spanked him too hard. I chastised him too much. That was the only time she was fearful in regards to Krishna, that I may have chastised him too much. But there's no fear of Krishna by the intimate devotees. Prahlad was not afraid of Narsingadev. Others, Lakshmadevi was a little worried, who is this person? I never saw my lord in this mood before. So she didn't want to go for it. Maybe he's not my husband. She was thinking, if we just understand the very wonderful qualities that Krishna actually has, as explained in the 9:29, of the Gita. Can you give me the Gita? Polish one. This is the Polish one. Krishna can read the Polish Gita, but I can't read the Polish Gita. Somebody will give this lecture in a couple of days from now. So Krishna says to Arjuna in 9:29, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Right? So Krishna, if you render devotion to Krishna, then he becomes your friend. Right? We may not be able to relate, you know, like in this, the Madhurya Ras with Krishna, but we can at least relate to Krishna as a friend, Sakya Ras, when we're in material condition. But so Krishna wants to be our friend. If we just do some devotion, he considers us to be his friend, and he considers himself to be our friend. So we just think we're going to do it for our friend. When Sudama Vipra, when he was going to visit Krishna, he was thinking, I want to bring something for my friend. I was thinking of Krishna as my friend. Let me bring something for him. And he was so embarrassed. He had nothing. So poor. So he told his wife, beg. She went and got some chura, chipped rice, flat rice. You're going to have to bring some presentation. You will visit your friend. So then when Sudama came, then he very respectfully, you know, seated him in a throne, washed his feet, fanned him, because not only is he a friend, but he's also his god brother, but he's also a Brahmin. And all the maid servants in the palace were just astonished how Krishna is treating this person. And Rukmini personally came and fanned him. And then Krishna was, you know, at the end, Krishna says, well, did you bring something for me? My friend, you must have brought something for me. And then, you know, Sudama was very embarrassed and shy. And even his wife wanted him to ask, you know, for some benediction, material benediction, because they're so poor. But he didn't want to ask that. But Krishna knew what his wife was asking him to ask, you know, that he didn't want it, but just to please his wife, he came. So just when he got that morsel, one speck, he ate that, and then Rukmini stopped him from taking any more. So that's just with that little bit, that was enough to fulfill, you know, a universe's worth of desires. Just that tiny little morsel was enough to fulfill. Don't take any more, because I won't be able to supply. Because Lakshmi Devi is the one who's supplying all these things. I won't be able to supply if you take any more from him. So just a little bit given, you know, as Hari Shari told me that when Srila Prabhupada heard that his godbrother Bhakti Vilas Tirtha had died. Now Bhakti Vilas Tirtha was not favorable to Srila Prabhupada. He was somewhat inimical. So when he died, Srila Prabhupada said he went back to Godhead, because he had pleased his guru, Bhakti Siddhanta. He was one of the Bhakti Siddhanta's earlier disciples who helped, was very instrumental in creating the Gaudiya Math. Even though some things happened later, which may not have been so kosher, so Prabhupada immediately said he went back to Godhead because he had pleased his Guru Maharaj. And then he said to Harishari, you cannot even understand the spiritual advancement that you're making. You don't even know how much spiritual advancement you're making just by doing the service that you're doing. You can't even comprehend it. the benefits that you're accruing. We think we're just doing, you know, so despite that little speck of rice that Krishna ate, so much was there for Sudama Vipra. So that's why Srila Prabhupada said, you can't yet even understand what benefits you're accruing from the devotional service you're performing. And that's when he thought of that when he was saying about Bhakti Vilas Tirtha, because Bhakti Vilas Tirtha later did, you know, there was a whole fighting in the Gaudiya Math. He was one of the main causes of that. But still, Srila Prabhupada said, because he had pleased his Guru Maharaj so much, he's going back to Godhead. Just like Srila Prabhupada said about Sudama Swami. He said to him that if you establish a temple in Japan, then I guarantee that Lord Chaitanya will take you back to Godhead if you do that. So Sudama Swami did that. Then he was a grihastha when he went and he took sannyas, but then he was gay. And he took to, after Srila Prabhupada left, he left the movement, disappeared, and he took to some very, his lifestyle was very questionable. And he got AIDS. He got AIDS and he was living in the most, in the Skid Row area, in the Bay Area where all the junkies, and they were dying. He was dying, basically speaking. So Brahmananda Swami heard about that. Brahmananda Prabhu heard about that. So he went with another devotee and they searched him out and they plucked him out of the sewer and they brought him to the LA temple where the devotees served him hand and foot until he died. Hand and foot until he died in the midst of the kirtan. Fulfilling Prabhupada's promise to him that he will go back, that Lord Chaitanya personally take him back to Godhead. I mean, who else? You're dying of AIDS in the gutter. So Krishna remembered his service and fulfilled the promise of Srila Prabhupada. So Krishna is not an ingrate. Ingrates are the worst people. Even cannibals won't eat ingrates. This is in the Shastra. There was one time there was a Brahmin who had a heron for a friend, and this Brahmin was very poor. And the heron said, Why are you lamenting? He said, I'm very poor. He said, well, you can just go. I have some rakshasas who are friends. You ask them, and they'll bless you, and you'll have unlimited wealth. So he said, okay. So he was very desirous of wealth. So he went to the forest where the rakshasas were. And the rakshasas, as soon as they saw him, they thought, oh, lunch is being served, coming of its own accord. So, but then, you know, he understood, but he immediately mentioned the name of his friend, the heron. I said, oh, you're a friend of his? No problem. What do you want? So he mentioned, you know, about his need for money. So don't worry, when you go home, it'll already be there. So he came home, and there was unlimited wealth was there, and he was very happy. But then, his friend, the heron showed up, and then they had in a fight, and he became, you know, inimical to him, and he killed him so ungrateful. And immediately the rakshasas understood by their mystic power that their friend had been killed, so they immediately showed up and they were so upset. You were ingrate, only because of him we didn't kill you, and only because of him we gave you wealth, and now you've killed him. So they immediately killed him. But even though they were rakshasas, they didn't eat him. So they dragged his carcass to the forest where there were a bunch of cannibals and said, here, you can eat this person. So the cannibals thought, well, you're man-eaters. Why didn't you eat them? But then they explain the story. Says, "Oh, he's an ingrate. We don't eat ingrates. The ingrates are so low that even the rakshashas won't eat them." So Krishna's not an ingrate. He appreciates, like he says. He said, "No, those who perform some devotional service, then they are a friend to me. They are in me, and I am a friend to them." Does that answer your question? So we just have to perform some devotional service, like in the Mahabharata, when of friends, Arjuna is considered the perfection of friendship. Arjuna perfected his life by being a friend to Krishna. So what does that mean? He was a friend of Krishna's. After Abhimanyu died, was killed, Arjuna was distraught. So Krishna went, made his bed for him. Then Arjuna said, you go console the ladies. He had to console Subhadra, Abhimanyu's mother, Uttara, his wife, and Draupadi, his stepmother, because they were totally distressed. So Krishna went at Arjuna's bidding to console them, and he's making his bed. But somebody makes your bed for you. Who is that? So that's what Krishna was doing, like that. When Sanjaya came from Hastinapur to Upaplavya on a mission from the Kauravas. So he went in the inner chambers to see Krishna and Arjuna. And what's Arjuna doing? He's laying down with his legs across Satyabhama, and they're all drinking wine. He's there with his wife Draupadi, Krishna, and Satyabhama, and he's got his legs on Krishna's wife. That's a very intimate friend. Of course, they're cousin brothers, And they were, so Sanjaya was like, he was completely overawed when he saw, how intimately they were behaving with each other. That Arjuna is a very close friend of Krishna's. Like Krishna's the charioteer. So Arjuna is fighting. So for the fighter to give direction to the charioteer, he has to hit him with his foot. So Arjuna is, all through the battle, he's kicking Krishna. Go this way, go there. Because he's shooting arrows and he's, concentrating. So to give directions which way he should go, he has to nudge him with his foot. So here's Arjuna, kicking Krishna numerous times every day to tell him which direction he should go. And Krishna's accepting that. So he's a friend. We just have to understand. We made a mistake coming to the material world. A very big mistake. Why we became envious of Krishna when he is actually our friend. Any other questions?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srimad Bhagavatam Granth Raj Ki Jai.